Viva.
Okay. Hi, everyone. Everyone should have gotten a handout. If you don't, it's probably on a desk somewhere near where you are. There's also a pile over there on the table right when you walk in if you need one. Okay, the topic, as you guys saw, is going to be the Torah perspectives on materialism and luxury. And my motivation for making this class is I was always bothered my whole life by our tendency, right? All of us have it, to want things and to buy things that we don't necessarily need. And we all would like to consider ourselves people who are striving to grow in their avodas Hashem, people who are striving to grow in their levels of spirituality. And when you think in your mind's eye about a truly spiritual person and how they would feel, you have a question?
Do you mind?
And how they would feel about materialistic things and stuff and luxuries, you might think, and I think certainly I felt this way, that a truly spiritual person doesn't really care so much about all of this. And yet, we all like to have clothing we don't need, and shoes we don't need, and bigger and nicer houses than we actually need, and we like to go out to eat, and most people enjoy taking part in the material world. And the question that I always had is this a contradiction to spirituality? Is there a way to reconcile spiritual growth and, you know, an attempt to achieve higher levels in ruchnius with all of these things in the material world that we deal with? When we got engaged, I go to register at Bed Bath & Beyond, like most people do, and I don't think that there's a time in life where you're like, you deal more with choosing tons and tons of stuff, right, to bring into your life. And you sit there and you debate over the exact color and plushness of towel and like the pots and the pans and all these different things. And like, I felt so like materialistic doing it all. But of course you need to do it. You can't not. And I remember sharing with someone who I was working with at the time, and if anyone went to Mayanote, it was Nav Orlean, that I just felt so uncomfortable. Like, I said to her, who really cares if I get like a plain brown towel? Does it really make a difference? Like, maybe it's stupid for me to spend the time picking out the nicest one. And she told me something that totally changed my perspective, and I'll share it with you later on in the class. But that's what I want to do. I want to try and give a context, a spiritual context, to all of this stuff. I don't know if you guys are experiencing what I am, but every time I sign into my inbox, so there's like 30 emails about like sales, especially this time of the year, right? And you get like, it like messes with your mind. You're like, oh my gosh, there's 50% off at whatever store. Like, quickly, I gotta find something I need. And like, whatever, it can mess with your mind. People can get like really caught up in this stuff. And we want to try and give it some spiritual context. So there's all different types of sources. There's a lot of you guys probably think offhand of some sources that really criticize dealing in the material world, Torah sources like that. And we also, on the other hand, can think of sources that talk about the wealth and luxury experienced by, for example, the Avos, right? Or people that we even know in our own lives who we consider spiritual and admirable people, but live in beautiful houses and have nice things. So we want to try and, you know, pull some of these sources together and come out with a conclusion. Similarly, right, I'm sure some of you guys perhaps are going into the fields of fashion or design, interior design. Is there a Torah perspective on that? Is that something that's totally in contradiction, right? Sitting there with minute choices over shades of color and material and shape and whatever, is that something that's in contradiction to a spiritual, growth-oriented person or not? So if you look at page number one of your sources, this is probably one of the most famous things that comes to mind that's anti-materialism. It's in Pirkei Avos, Mishnah Dalet. It says, Kachi darka shel Torah. Tas b'melach tochal, umayim b'msora tishte, v'ala arat tishan v'chayi tzar tichya. This is the way to live a Torah life. To have bread and water, right, that's it. And to live a chayi tzar, to live a very simple life with absolutely nothing extra. Okay, source number two. This is a Gemara in Maseches Chagiga. Shechazer HaKadosh Baruch Hu al kol midas tovos liten liyisrael v'lo matza ela anios. Poverty is one of the best midos that Hashem could bestow upon B'nai Yisrael. Poverty. And then the underline at the end of that source says, Ya'e aniyusa lindai. Poverty is beautiful for a Jewish person. Now, these two sources, they're not just saying, don't be ostentatious. They're not just saying, don't take your materialism too far. They're saying, poverty is the ideal. Living with basically nothing is how we should all be. Okay, that's one side of the coin. You have to deal with those sources. On the other hand, in source number 3, you have a pasuk in Devarim that says, Aser ta aser es kol tzvuat zarecha. That's the source for miser, to take a tenth off. And the Gemara comments on aser ta aser. This is very famous. Aser b'shvil shetit asher, right? That if you give miser, you're promised that you're going to become wealthy. Okay, in source number 5 also, in Sefer Devarim, a lot of times the reward promised to Bnei Yisrael for doing the right thing is going to be v'asavta diganecha v'sirosh chavitzarecha. You're going to have plentiful amounts of food. You're going to have everything you need. You're going to have everything you need in terms of food and parnasa. In source number 4, it says in Mishlei, Ekev anava yiras Hashem, osher v'kavod v'chayim. If you have humility in yiras Hashem, you're going to get wealth and honor and life. So, if wealth is being used as a reward for when Bnei Yisrael do the right thing, how bad could it be? Would you promise your child a pack of cigarettes if they did the right thing? Of course not. It can't be that wealth is something so terrible if Hashem rewards us with it. In source number 6, I won't read it inside, but this is a Gemara that talks about how the Kohen Gadol, when he leaves the Kodesh Kedashim on Yom Kippur, right, after the holiest moments in the entire year, he says a small tefillah. And the Amoraim debate over what was the content of that tefillah, but they all agree that it was something having to do with parnasa, not with tshuva, not with spiritual growth, not with kapara, but something to do with parnasa. In source number 7, there's a list of things in this Mishnah, Maseches Avos, that if you look at the last underline, are na'el tzadikim v'na'el olam, beautiful for tzadikim and beautiful for the world. And one of them, I underline for you, is osher. So we have this total contradiction here. On one hand, we see that a life of poverty is put on a pedestal, having absolutely nothing. And on the other hand, osher and wealth is used as a reward in Torah. It's considered a midah tova. It's considered something important and integral to our lives. So we would all like to just look at the bottom of the page and say, great, that works for me, right? And just ignore the top 2 sources. But you can't do that. We have to somehow deal with them. We have to understand what these sources, what is the message of these sources? What is so bad about having anything more than the bare minimum? Why is it a good thing to be in poverty? Why is wealth and materialistic things something to be avoided? So if you turn to page 2, we're going to start talking now about some of the negative effects of wealth. We're going to come up with at least 5, okay? In source number 8, this is from the Orchos Tzadikim, and in discussing the Midah of Kina, he says as follows, HaChachamim HaRishonim Hayu Mitzpalalim, they would daven Shelo Tehe Kinasenu Al Achirim V'lo Kinas Achirim Aleinu, that we should not have Kina be jealous of other people, and people should similarly not be jealous of us. Now this is very striking, because when we think of, you know, an attempt to grow in a certain area, let's say we're trying to work on our Lashon Hara, so maybe we'll daven to Hashem to help us not speak Lashon Hara. But would you also daven that your friends shouldn't? It's a strange thing to do when you're trying to work on something. So why is it that he's mentioning that people shouldn't be jealous of him as well? I'm going to continue. Lama hayu mitzpalalim al achirim bezos hamida. Why are they davening for other people? Yoter mimidos achiros. Why dafka with kina? Ela kacha inyan. This is what it's talking about. Many people cause people to be jealous of them. They were concerned that they were personally doing things that would cause other people to be jealous of them. And now the double underline is key. Lachain mida tova ba'adam shelo yilbash begadim na'im u'mishubachim yoter midai. It is considered a good mida that a person should not dress too nicely. Lohu v'lo ishto v'lo banav, not him or his family. V'chein L'inyan hama'achal u'shar nyanim. And so too with food. Not eat too nicely. Kidei shelo yikanu bo'achayim. So people won't be jealous of him. Ach mi she'eshpia lo habor yisparach u'shar n'chasim. But someone who Hashem has blessed with extra, yehenem mehem la'achayim. He should share with other people. And he goes on to say that when you're generous with your materialistic brachos, people are not going to be jealous of you the same way. So, negative impact number one of having luxury and wealth and extra is that people are going to be jealous of you. That's just the way things are in this world. You guys can take searches if you want. That's just the way things are. People are going to be jealous of people who have more. That's human nature. And the suggestion that he makes is that it's considered a good midah to tone it down a drop, not be too different than everyone else, not be too ostentatious. If you could afford to have 50 sweaters, just have 20. If you could afford to go out to eat every night, go out once a week. That way, people aren't going to be as jealous. Additionally, he says, it's a good idea to share your wealth, to give tzedakah, to be generous with others, and people are not going to be as jealous of you. But it definitely is a stumbling block. When a person has a lot of material extras, it's a stumbling block that people are going to be jealous of him, and that's something negative that we want to avoid. The next one, the next negative effect of wealth, we're going to be talking about in source number 9. This is the Menachem Tzion by Menachem Mendel Zaks, and he's commenting on the storyline by when Bnei Yisrael were asked to bring Truma to the Mishkan. They were all commanded to donate, right? And then at a certain point, Moshe said, it's too much, everybody stop. There's too much donation. And the question that he asks is, why did they stop them? With the Beis HaMikdash, such a thing never happened. What would be wrong if they just made it bigger and more beautiful and made everything a better quality and more expensive and shinier and whatever you could do? Why tell people to stop? Just make it nicer and nicer. So he says in the bracket, in source number 9, Hata'am hu, ki yasa mishkan hayatzorech l'taltel u'lehasiya mimakom l'makom b'chol ma'asei b'nei Yisrael. The reason that he told people to stop is because the mishkan was something that had to be carried. Ha'aron, ha'menorah, ha'shochan, v'ha'mizveah, ha'zav, ha'yitzrichim li'hinasei b'ketah. People had to carry them on their shoulders. And they had to take it apart and put it back together. In the underline, it says, ha'torah lo ratzda la'achbid et ha'masa al eila shitasku b'kach. The Torah didn't want to make it too hard for the people who had to work carrying it around and putting it back together and taking it apart. So, and he says that, therefore, the conclusion that we could come to from here, in the third paragraph, you're not allowed to go further in mitzvos if it's going to cause a negative impact on other people, if it's going to make other people's burden harder to carry. When it comes to things in the materialistic world, this is where things like simcha guidelines come in and uniforms. When people have a lot of extra and then they use it to do things, right, with totally good intentions, but what results is that the standards in the community are raised. And that can cause people a lot of shame and a lot of problems. Imagine how it would feel if someone's in, you know, their child is in a class where everyone's getting a certain brand of shoe and they would love to buy it for their child, but they just can't. And it's not considered an avera, it's not usur to use your money to buy these types of things, to make a big, beautiful simcha, to go all out and do everything to the fullest extent, but there is a tremendous greatness in restraint, in being sensitive to the fact that you raise the standards for everybody when you go all out, when you use your wealth, when you make the biggest mishkan ever. It ends up being a burden for other people. Imagine the beautiful lesson in chinuch one could have when they take their child to the store to buy goodie bags. And there's an option, let's say, for a 2-shekel bag, a 5-shekel bag, and a 10-shekel bag. And you say to your child, we're going to buy the 2-shekel one. We just want to make sure maybe there's children in your class whose mommies and abbas can't afford to buy the more expensive ones. We don't want to make anyone else feel bad. And then that child goes home with such a beautiful lesson in chinuch, right? That's such a great example that you're setting for them. There's greatness in restraint. But a second side effect of having a lot of excess, of not restraining, is that you raise the standards for other people, you could cause people to feel pressured, and you could cause people to feel shame. The right way to handle this is discussed in source number 10. This is a Mishnah Maseches Tainis that talks about what they would do on Tu B'Av. Right, Tu B'Av was the day where the girls would go out and dance, and each man would pick the one who he wanted to be his wife. And in describing what these girls were wearing, it says in the underline, the clay lavan sho'olin. they would all wear borrowed white dresses. Why? Shalola vayishish misha aimlo, so as not to embarrass someone who didn't have, you know, the most beautiful thing to go out and dance before the boys. That would be the equivalent of, right, everyone going on a single Shabbaton and saying, okay, we're all going to wear the same thing. That's how sensitive they were to each other. It's something very, very admirable, very, very beautiful. Okay. If you turn to source number 11, this is going to be the third negative side effect. The Gemara Maseches Brachos tells us, Shlosha marchivim da'ato shel adam. There are three things that widen a person's mind. Elu hein dira na'ev, isha na'ev, kinglam na'im. A beautiful home and a beautiful wife and beautiful things widen a person's mind. Now, there are many ways to explain what it means to widen your mind. But the Maharsha says, right underneath, he says, Hainu shigehe da'ato v'nafsho rechava l'mehader achar ta'anugei olam hazeh. What does it mean to widen his mind? He's going to become obsessed with running after pleasures in this world. When you have things, when you have items, they cause a distraction. They cause a preoccupation. You have a car, it breaks, it needs accessories, right? When we start adding on extra things in life, they do become a distraction. They do become something that we could spend time away from things that are more important to deal with those things. And that's negative effect number three. It's definitely a distraction. It definitely takes away from more important things. The fourth one is in source number 12. This is a pasuk in Sefer Devarim. It says, "Pentocha v'savatu uvatim tovim tivne v'yashav." They're talking about the Yisrael coming to the land of Eretz Yisrael, and things are going well. They're satiated. They have their nice houses. And then in pasuk Yedalot it says, "V'ram levavecha v'shachachta es Hashem." But you're going to become haughty and you're going to forget Hashem. When someone has poverty, when someone really needs, you know, they never know where their next dollar's coming from or where their next meal's coming from, they rely on Hashem in a different way than a person who doesn't have those concerns. A person whose parnasa comes easily, he's not going to have that, like, direct, you know, connection that Hashem is directly involved in his life the same way. He's not going to daven the same way. He's not going to connect to Him the same way. He's at a disadvantage. That's the fourth one. The melech is required to carry around a sefer Torah for this reason. A melech is one of the wealthiest people in Klal Yisrael. He has, you know, an endless amount of horses and things and gold and silver. But he's commanded. The Torah tells us he must carry around a sefer Torah at all times to remind him that it's all from Hashem, that he's connected to Hashem, because all that stuff can be a distraction and take you away. The last negative side effect is on page 4. The article that looks like this, source number 13. I'm not going to read it inside, but the idea is that excitement deprives children of happiness. The more excitement in your life, the more exciting, flashy things and stuff, the less conducive it is to feeling happiness. Children who are constantly getting everything they want and new toys and everything that they need, they're not going to get as excited about a toy. They don't appreciate it as much the same way. Rabbi Fran tells a story about how he was, you know, buying a new refrigerator, and they had a choice whether to get one with an ice maker or without. And he chose to go without the ice maker because he said to himself, if I get an ice maker, then my children are going to grow up thinking that an ice maker is just standard. Whereas when they go to someone else's house now, when there's an ice maker, they appreciate it. And they say, wow, that's really cool. And they appreciate how easy it is to get ice. But if you grow up with it, if you're being inundated with extras and luxury, it becomes the norm. And the bar for being happy and excited keeps getting higher and higher. So we can see from these ideas that, you know, the sources that talk about poverty being a good thing, we can understand from where they're coming from, right? It's definitely a stumbling block. If you're going to venture into the waters of having extras, there's a lot you have to keep in mind, a lot you have to be careful of, a lot of negative effects you want to avoid. I want to now talk about a few more ways we can combat these things if we're going to be venturing into the world of materialism. And then I want to talk about a totally different perspective, which is how it's actually something completely lechatchila and something positive, right? Like we said, it's used as a reward. It's considered a good midah. We're going to end off with that. If you look at source number 14, back to page 2. Sorry, page 3. No, yeah, page 3. Okay, page 3. This is from Sefer Shemos, Bnei Yisrael are leaving Mitzrayim, and Hashem says to them, through Moshe and Pasuk Bet, Daber na ba'ozni ha'am, yishalu ish mireyehu, yishami isri, yusak le kesef kli zahav. Hashem tells Moshe to tell Bnei Yisrael to borrow things from all their Mitzri neighbors. And the obvious question is, they weren't planning on returning it. Why is he calling it borrow? And the Chidushei Harim in source number 15 explains that what was going on here was when Hashem said borrow, he was giving Bnei Yisrael direction for the rest of their life as to how they should be approaching the material world. If you look at the underline, he says, right, V'lama, in source number 15, he says, V'lama hitzdarchu l'halvos, why did it have to be as a loan? I'm continuing in the underline. Ela zehaya tachlis ashirutam shel Yisrael. It was the first time that Bnei Yisrael were experiencing wealth. He didn't want them to cleave to this inheritance with all their hearts. That's why Hashem wanted them to view it as if it was something borrowed, so that they would have to give it back. Hashem's directive for all time as to how we should approach our materialistic possessions is to view it as if it's borrowed. What does that do? You appreciate it in a totally different way. If you borrow someone's luxury item, so then you know you're going to give it back, you appreciate it fully, and you try and make sure you're taking advantage of it to the fullest extent. You make sure you're taking good care of it, you don't take it for granted. This happens to us every summer. We don't own a car. When my parents go to America for the summer, they give us a car. Now, if you owned a car all year round, so you don't really think twice about it, you just get into your car, right? That's how it was for me before I got married and didn't have a car. And when we have the car, we're always like, wow, it's so nice. We can just get from one place to the other so easily. We just turn on the air conditioning and it's so nice and cool. And it's so easy to go shopping and just put everything in the trunk. And I think to myself also, am I running every errand that I need to do? Am I using the car right? And every moment that I'm in the car, I appreciate it. And I'm grateful that I have the opportunity. Another effect it has on me is that you don't find fault with it. There's nothing to complain about. If the CD player is not working, I don't care. It doesn't belong to me. I'm lucky to have it. Okay? If we would look at all of our materialistic pleasures in life as something that's kind of like on a loan, we would avoid a lot of the pitfalls that come with materialistic things. You wouldn't get too obsessed with it. It would be more of an appreciation, more of a humble perspective as a way of looking at it. This ties in beautifully with the next source number 16 from Avolbi. He's talking about the conversation between Yaakov and Esav, where Esav says, Yeshli Rav, I have a lot. And Yaakov says, Yeshli Kol, I have everything. And the question that he asks is, Yaakov is the Ish HaEmes. Why is he exaggerating here? Why not say, I have enough, or I have everything I need? Why does he have to say, I have everything? He doesn't really have everything. What do we learn out from this? If you look at the bracket on the bottom of source 16, Yitzer hara hu hakoach hashoef lehosif tamid taiva v'tanog. We all have a yitzer hara to increase pleasure and things in our life. The kol hamosif goreya, but the more that you go after that yitzer hara, the worse it is. Kasher nitzol miha yitzer hara legamrei. When we can totally get rid of this yitzer hara, v'ha'atchala lezeh histapkut shelo. The goal is to get to a point where you have histapkus, where you're happy with what you have. Zacha la kol. Then you're going to be like Yaakov, who could say Yishli kol. Okay, now I'm at the arrow. This is the key line. V'hinei b'signon chayim shel riboy rechush mitbatet she'ifa leharbot v'kamos. Someone who is going after materialistic pleasures and that desire is rooted in something negative, is rooted in a yitzer hara, is a she'ifa leharbot v'kamos. They want to go get more in terms of quantity. Someone who's happy with what he has, balo signon chayim shel bakasha ta'ichos. He goes after quality. And he's more and more, he takes more and more pleasure in what he has. This is such a tremendous chiddush. He's saying that the difference between someone who's motivated by yetzer hara when they want more stuff in their life, as opposed to someone who's motivated by something good, is the difference between quality and quantity. Are you looking for more things? Are you happy with your materialistic pleasures? And does it give you pleasure because of the amount? And you say, oh, I have 10 sweaters, I need another 20. oh, I bought myself a new pair of shoes. Well, I need a belt and a hair accessory to match. Is it about the quantity? Or is it a deep appreciation for the quality? Wow, I got a beautiful new sweater, and I'm so grateful that I have this. That is bakashat ha'ichut, seeking quality. And the chiddush is that there is nothing not spiritual about getting pleasure from the material world if you do it with that context in mind. If the material items make you just want more and see it in terms of the context of quantity, that's the Yetzer Hara. But if the material items make you appreciate the quality and be grateful for what you have and get real hana'ah from the gift of having this item, that is called being histapek. That's midas kol. Hasameach b'chalko, right? Ezehu asher hasameach b'chalko. It doesn't say who is rich, one who is okay with what he has. He's saying sameach. You're supposed to be happy with what you have. If you have 10 sweaters, that is supposed to give you a pleasure. If you have a nice house, that's supposed to give you a pleasure. All these things are supposed to lead to simcha. There's nothing non-spiritual about gaining simcha from material items. But we need to be careful that it's not coming from a context of quality. Context of quality type of mindset. Okay, let's go on to page 5. Okay, so far we've been talking a lot about damage control. Okay? What do you do if you want materialistic things? What should you avoid? What should you try and think? But what about what I said originally, which is the lichatchila aspects here? What are the things that are dafka specifically good about having, materialistic things in your life? So the first thing we're going to talk about is a different way of looking at source number 11, which was on page 3. We said that there's many ways of looking at the statement shlosha marchivim dato shel adam. There are three things that widen a person's mind: a nice house, a nice wife, and nice things. And the other way that we're going to talk about it right now is we can take out of source 17. Okay, the article says, when I was in South Africa, I visited a teenage girl who's been caring for a sibling since she lost her parents to AIDS in a shack no bigger than most of our living rooms. This girl had covered one of the stone walls with pretty cloth, a piece of bright color in desperate times. She was making a bleak environment more livable, honoring her own presence there. When we speak, we're the first to hear our own words, to feel their impact. What we say and hear manifests itself as the life we create, one choice at a time. And when we fill our lives and our homes with things that uplift us, we become the product of that environment. We want to give the world our best. We want the best in return. Maintaining a gorgeous house or apartment is about respecting the very important person who lives in it, you. Okay, this is exactly what the Rambam says in source number 18, Shmona Prachim the Rambam. That when we make an effort to make our environments beautiful, that is going to uplift our inside. He says, Lefi shehanefesh shla'a utitamein hamachshava mihitzmadat ri'iyat dvarim hakashim. A person's soul goes through life and sees a lot of harsh things. The same way a person's body gets tired after doing harsh things all the time, so too does a person's nefesh. And then it could replenish its strength if it rests. How do you relax your nefesh? I'm in the underline. To busy itself with enjoyments of the senses, kigon histaklut b'tziurim udvarim hanayim, like looking at paintings and beautiful things. I'm continuing in the next underline. V'lo pu'ulot levatala, and these are not wasteful things. This is not for no reason. It's not a pointless occupation. Klomar hitzorit b'tziurim v'chiyurim b'vinyanim b'kelim u'v'vegadim. Surrounding yourself with beautiful things to look at, buildings and items and clothes, is not something that's a waste of time. I'm continuing in the bracket. V'cheinim gavra alav mara hashchora, if a person's black and feeling down, yasirena b'shmirat shirim u'minei niginot, he could listen to music, uv'tiyo baginot u'binyanei pe'er, and walking in beautiful gardens and beautiful homes, v'yeshiva and tsurot na'ot, and looking at beautiful sculptures. And the key line is the bottom underline, v'yitzkarvein b'chozeh lehavrot et gufo v'tachlit b'yot gufo k'dei she'idah. What's the kavana you should have while you're engaging in all of this beautiful surroundings and making your environment beautiful? To allow your nefesh the opportunity to replenish itself and to refresh, and then to you know, to get better, and it's avodas Hashem. This is what it means that these three things, a beautiful wife, a beautiful home, and beautiful things, are marchiv da'ato shel adam. They widen a person's mind. There's a huge difference between coming home to a bare, you know, white-painted, cracking, not aesthetically pleasing environment than coming home to a warm, cozy room where you picked out the things that you like. It uplifts a person on the inside. That's not gashmias. That's ruchnias. I told you that I was having a hard time when registering for my wedding. So what the person who I was sharing that with said to me, she said, you have a totally wrong perspective. One day you're going to be having a hard day, you're going to be in a bad mood, and then you're going to walk into your bathroom and the purple fluffy towel is going to be there, and it's going to make you feel a little bit warmer. It's going to make it a little bit easier, you know, to then be in a good mood. And I think this is also like definitely pshat in the spiritual perspectives on what it means to go into design. A friend of mine is an interior designer, and she said that she felt just so materialistic. She spends her days sitting with people, discussing, you know, shades of wood and cabinets and exactly where to put their sink and the molding on the wall. And she once spoke to a rav about it, and he said to her, you are helping people build their bias neman yisrael in the most concrete way. When a house is beautiful, and when a house is designed in a way that's conducive to the easiest, you know, cooking in the kitchen, or the cozy feeling, or the colors perfectly match, and that makes everyone, it's pleasing to the eye, so then the mood of the people in that house is going to be different. It's going to lend itself to a calmer atmosphere. It is going to affect people. Our environment affects us. And that's pshat in what it means to be marchiv da'ato shel adam. That is why it's not a waste of time. It's actually something spiritual to invest and to care about these things. But like the Rambam says, v'yitkaven b'chol zeh lahavros es gufo v'tzachlit b'riyut gufo kedei sheyida. This is what your kavana has to be. Your kavana has to be to use the environment to raise the ruchnius level in your house. Okay, similarly, with clothing, we're going to talk about now, you can see a very similar idea. The Sefer Achinach tells us in Mitzvah 275 that a kohen with a mum is not allowed to serve in the Beis HaMikdash. If he's disfigured or funny looking in some way, he's not allowed to do the avoda. And that doesn't really seem fair. But he tells us in source number 19, the Shershei HaMitzvah here, at the root of this precept lies the reason that most actions of people are acceptable, appealing to the heart of those who see them, in accordance with the eminence of those who do them. People are willing to take ideas and to learn from someone based on who they are. For when a man is distinguished in his appearance, when he looks good and is good in his actions, he will find grace and good understanding with all that he does in the eyes of all who observe him. Should he be, however, the opposite of this, inferior in his form or peculiar in his limbs, then even if he is straight in his ways, his activities will not be so attractive to the heart of those who see him. It is therefore truly fitting that the messenger on whom atonement depends should be a man of grace, handsome in appearance, and fair in features, and pleasing in all his ways, that the minds of men may be drawn to him. Okay? Not that this is so great, but this is human nature. When someone looks strange and funny and disfigured, people are not going to listen to their ideas and have the same amount of respect for them and be influenced by them in the same way as if they are they look nice and they're put together and everything about their body is normal and regular and nice looking and appealing to the eye. And that's why the Kohen Gadol who's doing the Avoda in the Beis HaMikdash has to be someone who can't have a mum, because that would detract from the impact he could have on the people. And right, we're not Kohanim Gadolim, and not all of us are even, you know, in leadership positions. But in our own lives, we all can apply this in our own ways. Everyone has people in their circle of influence, whether you're going to be a parent to children, or a teacher, or head of something, or in any position of leadership, or just with your friends. The way that you present yourself in terms of your dress, and whether or not you're in style, and how much clothing you have, and how nice it is, it's going to have an impact. And I think that the kavana to have, when we do, you know, get more things that we need to wear and to put in our bodies, I think this is the perspective that we can do it with. I know in my life with my children, there's night and day between when I put my shaitel on and I dress nicely, my daughter is in heaven, right? She's happier to be around me when I'm like that. And that's just the way it is. When someone looks nice, you're going to be more open to getting things from them. We're all representatives of something, whether it's Klal Yisrael, a frum person, and I think that the kavana to have when you're engaging in the materialistic world is not that you're just, you know, not thinking about spirituality at all, but there's something to say for, you know, attempting to look nice, attempting to look a certain way, attempting to not look outdated and out of fashion, or to, you know, to have the acceptable amount of things, because you want to be representing the values of Kol Yisrael. You want to be a person who people will see as like a relatable person, as someone who they can learn from and admire. And I think that that's what we could have in mind when we're dealing with, you know, clothing and stuff like that. The last source I want to mention, source number 20, this is also Sefer Deban. When Hashem gave Bnei Yisrael the man, so he says in Pasuk Tet Zayin that one of the reasons he gave them the man was l'man nasotecha, in order to test you. And the man, right, when Bnei Yisrael were in the Midbar, they were getting the man, they had absolutely no need to make any efforts for Parnassa. They had everything they needed. It all came to them very easily. And the Sforno says, what was the test of the man? And the underline on the bottom, im ta'aseh ritzono b'teito parnascha shelo b'tzar. The test of the man was that when everything came easy, when Bnei Yisrael had more than they needed, when they didn't have to work hard for their Parnassa, when they had that, you know, that feeling of luxury, of just waking up in the morning and all they needed was there, were they going to do Hashem's will? Any extras we have in life, any ease we have with Parnassa, on any level, it doesn't mean that you have to be the richest person in the world, but any extras we have in life are all an opportunity for a test. Are we going to use them to avoid all the negative pitfalls of that can come along with having extras, with having more materialism, more luxury? And are we going to be doing them with the right kavana to enhance the spirituality in our lives or not? Okay, we'll stop here.
For Zahava, this is...